Good morning and welcome to O-Readers Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Kathy Kay and I am a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Monday, January 13th, 2020. Today we are reading from the Big Book and we are on page 82, the second full paragraph. Today's readers are Kathy G. on the 12 steps, Rhonda R. on the 12 Traditions, and reading the text are Shannon M., Kara L., and Eileen M. The share ID number for yesterday's Sunday special edition is 13,959, or 13959. And the share ID for this morning's 7 a.m. East Coast meeting is 13,960, or 13960. Our newcomer greeter today is Mo H., and giving us announcements today is Reggie O. Okay, OA preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At A Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Kathy G. to read the 12 steps of OA.
Thank you, Kathy. This is Kathy G., grateful, a recovered compulsive overeater in Illinois. The 12 steps. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you. I pass.
Thank you, Kathy G. And I will now ask Rhonda R. to read the 12 traditions of OA.
Good morning, Kathy, and everyone on the line. This is Rhonda R. in Georgia. The 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, film, television, and other public media of communication. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you for allowing me to be of service today.
Thank you, Rhonda R. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker's should be muted. Today we resume our study of the Big Book on page 82, the second full paragraph. And I will ask Shannon M. to get us started.
Hi, I'm Shannon M., recovered compulsive overeater in Texas. If we have no such complication, there is plenty we should do at home. Sometimes we hear an alcoholic say that the only thing he needs to do is to keep sober. Certainly he must keep sober, for there will be no home if he doesn't. But he is yet a long way from making good to the wife or parents whom for years he has so shockingly treated. Passing all understanding is the patience and wives have had with alcoholics. Had this not been so, many of us would perhaps be dead. And I can tell you that my husband could care less that I'm abstinent. He doesn't care at all that I overeat food. That doesn't impress him because he's been sober for almost 15 years now. And so he's actually told me, like, I don't care that you're not in the food. What I care about is how you treat me. And really that's the whole point, is that I don't have the food. And so now I get to be a wife and I get to be a mom. And so there's a lot of stuff that I should be doing at home, and things that I'm working on, to demonstrate my behavior. 'Cause I really downplayed what I did to him and downplayed just like how mean and cruel and how I treated him. And like it says, so shockingly treated. I really didn't realize how terrible I had been. And And he's told me, you know, Shannon, it's going to take a long time for me to trust you and to know that you're going to react in the same way. And that, and I know that I have to earn that trust back. And I'm just grateful I have the opportunity to do that, because it says many of us would have no homes today. Honestly, when I look back at how I've treated him for the last, you know, 6 years that I was really in the food, we met when I was abstinent and then I went back to the food, and he had 6 years of me in relapse. And I am so grateful that he did stick by me, and I'm grateful that I get to be a better wife to him today. Okay, Sarah, mommy will be right there. And it's cool, this weekend I get to demonstrate these principles for a second time being absent. My family is coming to town, and typically that creates a lot of chaos and discord. But the last time they came, I was able to act different, and I was able to do my extra prayers and meditation and outreach calls and just really work the principles of this program. And he doubted it the whole time that I was going to be different, but I got to be different, and he was able to trust me in a different way. And so I get the opportunity to repeat that and to repeat the behaviors that this program is teaching me, and the, and just use all of my spiritual tools. And then he's going to, you know, hopefully get to see again that, like, I can be different. And each time I do that, he just gets more trust in that I'm changing. And I get to trust my higher power more, because I see how my higher power is changing me and how the program is changing me. And it just makes me more excited to do program. And so I'm just really grateful for that. Thanks. I'll pass.
Thank you so much, Shannon, for getting us started. Okay, I'd like to take some names of people who would like to share.
Ginger C.
Ginger C.
Julie E.B.
Julie E.B. Who is after Julie?
Bruce E.
Anyone else?
Deborah G. Shlomi Shana.
Okay, Deborah G. and Shlomi Shana.
And Leah S.
And Leah S. Okay, we'll stop there. Thank you. Okay, please go ahead, Ginger C.
Hi, Kathy. Good morning, and thank you for your service. This is Ginger C., recovered compulsive overeater in Colorado. So this, you know, this home piece is just really hitting. And even though there is no such complications, there's plenty, again, that we should do at the home. And page 19 reminds us that a much more important demonstration of these principles lies in my home. And it's unbelievable how important it is to this family in front of us. And I know for me, with my own experience, because that's all I have to share on these lines, is that I got really busy into this work, so much so that I was neglecting the home. I was absolutely not available. I was not, I just was so disconnected again. You know, first it was the food that took me away from my family for many years, but then it was this work. And I felt like I would eat if I didn't have a certain amount of sponsees and all this fear, and it was not about God, and it was not trusting and relying on that source. And it was this fear-based living, but sadly, my family went through hell again. God, first they went through hell with the food. Now they're going through hell because of this 12-step program. So I just really emphasize, you know, strenuous hard work, that's one alcoholic to another reading this book. You don't have to have four sponsees or be doing all these different outside things. Because, again, a more important demonstration is within those walls, within that house. And I love that quote by a famous lady who says, if you want world peace, go home and love your family, because then they'll go out into this world and love more. So I just love this home piece and this idea, and especially this home piece within me. You know, I get to practice this work, these principles, and I get to return home to Ginger. It's sort of like the prodigal son. It's a beautiful story about a boy who goes out and looks for love in all the wrong places and goes pretty crazy, but this father just patiently, lovingly waits, just like my God. And that's all God's done for me. It's just waited while I had to go out and go crazy. And now the gift is with these 12 steps, I get to come home to Ginger in the way God created me, and there is no greater gift. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Ginger C. Julie E. B., please share with us.
Hi, this is Julie E.B. I gratefully recovered today in Colorado. And I just want to share that I use this paragraph and the one that follows in my amends, my original amends, to my husband. And that was the time that he teared up because I finally stopped blaming him for all of our problems. I had finally seen that it was his patience and forbearance that brought us through so much. I'd always decided he was the problem and the reason that I felt insecure and scared. And now as God is leading me to take steps to just renew her marriage, as our nest is emptying, once again, I'm back to, it was really helpful what the last speaker said, to just really getting a God who loves me, because I have so much insecurity that pops up. And without this work in my home, my God filling this, I would look to him to meet all of my needs. And so I feel really grateful today. I actually, very few times in my life, had a higher power speak to me, but one time my kids were just little. The one leaving the nest wasn't even born yet. And I said, what if my husband can't meet my needs? And clear as day, I heard in my mind, I will meet your needs. And so I've had that promise for a long time, and I'm trying to live in that promise so that my higher power meets my needs. And then what I do is demonstrate that I can be useful and of service each day and see what God does with that, thinking of the needs of the other. Thanks for letting me share. I pass.
Thank you, Julie E.B. Bruce E., please share with us.
Well, thank you. Really glad to be on the line. Happy to be doing this reading here. I'm Bruce E. I'm down in Fort Myers, Florida area. And very grateful for this book. I know for two or three weeks here we're talking about finances, and then a week or two about sex, and now it's about the home life. And, man, I probably talk more about the home life than finances and sex, you know. And believe me, I can talk a lot about those two, too. But so what's the story on this thing here? Sometimes we hear an alcoholic say that the only thing he needs to do is to keep sober. Well, most of us know that's absolutely nonsense. That's the first thing, maybe. That's point A. The primary thing is to keep abstinent. That's number one. But, you know, I heard on this line once somebody say, if all you got is abstinence, you ain't got a lot. So, you know, I've thought for years, oh, I got to get abstinent. I got to get abstinent. I got to white knuckle it and get abstinent. Well, it's a whole lot more than abstinence. Well, what else is it? It's about honesty with my wife. Yet a long way from making good to the wife whom for years he has so shockingly treated. I don't know how long my wife was hiding food from me when I was really in the throes of this thing. And that's insanity to be in it, living in a house with somebody when they're, you know, they're hiding food from you. They don't even trust you with food. And so 20, 25 years later, I mentioned that to my wife that you used to, she said, you don't have a problem. You shouldn't even be in that program. Well, I know different than that. She just didn't or doesn't. But so I said, yeah, but you are, don't you remember when you used to hide food from me? And she didn't even remember that. She had forgotten it or forgiven it. I don't know. Let it go. surrendered it. I don't know. My wife's not an addict, so she used to do that, and she forgot she did it. But I treated her. I've treated her bad, especially when I was in the addiction. But how else do I treat her bad? Well, how about rigorous honesty? I'm not rigorous honest. I'm not. My sponsor said to me, he said, "You're a dishonest person." Ooh, man, that didn't sit well. But he was right. I am a dishonest person. You got a guy on the line here that's dishonest. How am I dishonest? Well, I told my wife this morning that I planned. She said, "When are you going out?" I said, "Well, I'll be going out at 9 o'clock." I said, "Take the dog out and get some exercise." "When I'm going out at 9 o'clock." Then I thought, well, no, wait a minute. I can't make it out by 9. I can't get everything done and ready by 9. I mean, I really meant to say, to be totally honest, was to say I'm going to start getting ready to get out the door at 9. And so when she came back to me, she says, something. And I said, "I'm going to start getting ready to get out the door at 9. She said, "Well, then that's odd that you weren't honest with me." And I said, "Yeah, I know. Thank you." And I passed.
Thanks, Bruce E. Deborah G., please share with us.
Hi, everyone. I'm Deborah, a recovered compulsive overeater. And thank you, Kathy, for your service and everyone that has made this meeting possible. And thank you all for all the shares and 12-stepping me today. And I was thinking about all those times of being so self-centered, so self-absorbed, and, you know, having these experiences with other people where I would lash out, defects of character, you know, I wasn't sleeping good, I was living with a crazy head because the sugar was making me insane, I couldn't think straight, I couldn't be there for people. You know, I was in the mental obsession about the food and taking food that other people could be eating at different events where there was a lot of food. I'd take all of one food. You know, just all that crazy, crazy distorted thinking and behaviors and on how that affected not just my family, close family, but my family of 12-step people, because I'm in other programs and they're my family, and how I would come to meetings and how I'd be at meetings, and or even just family in general out there. We're all connected. We're all one, you know, whose lives I affected. And I'm just so grateful that because of these beautiful 12 steps that that's changing now in my life. And thank you so much. Have a beauty day.
Thank you very much, Deborah G. Shlomo Shana, please share with us.
Yes, thank you so much for your service to the moderator and to the timekeeper. And thank you, everybody, for being on this meeting. Very appreciative. So, I think I'm also focusing on that line, but he is yet a long way from making good to the wife or parents whom for years he has so shockingly treated. And, you know, I was thinking about the phrase shockingly treated. How have I shockingly treated my family? You know, I'm coming out of relapse. I guess it's been about 2 weeks, and I'm so incredibly, incredibly grateful. And when I was in relapse, you know, yes, definitely my mood was, it was very difficult for me to, you know, to manage life on life's terms. And, my mood was not great. And, you know, my anger usually is especially directed at my husband, and he does not deserve that because he's an excellent husband and excellent father. And, you know, in the next line where it talks about the patience of these amazing wives and families that have stuck with the alcoholic you know, even through the alcoholics' difficulty and the way that they've treated their family, my husband, I really have to give him credit. He has really had a lot of patience and stuck by me. And, you know, not taken my moves personally, which is a lot. And I just had to express appreciation for that tremendously. But one of the things that happens also when I'm in the food or in my disease is I don't always necessarily lash out, but I go inward. I isolate and I get into a depression. And it's very difficult for me to just get things done that need to be done, you know, like, you know, cleaning up the house and straightening the house and making sure that it, you know, looks decent, making appointments for my kids, getting things that they need. And one of my children, my oldest daughter in particular, really, she really suffers from that. You know, because she's just constantly reminding me of things that I need to do for her. And, you know, I end up getting annoyed because she's nagging me. But it really is coming from insecurity because I'm not getting the things done that she needs. And when I'm in the food or in my disease, that's what happens. And that causes insecurity for my family. And thank you, God, being out of the food, I feel myself starting to get out of that and starting to get out of the depression, thank you, and being more effective as a mother and a wife. Thank you. I'll pass.
Thank you, Shloma Shani. Leah S., please share with us.
Thank you so much, Kathy. And thank you, everyone on the line. My name is Leah S. I'm recovered and so extremely grateful in Brooklyn. This paragraph is kind of a reckoning kind of thing. And I'm facing myself and saying, why do I want to be abstinent? Why do I have to continue to do these things? Why? How difficult was my abstinence alone, and now how difficult is it to face the repercussions of everything and all the damage that I had done to this house and to my own dear loved ones? Why would I want to do it? And you know what I reminded myself is that the entire chapter of We Agnostics needs to be reviewed very thoroughly. And on page 52, I need to ask myself, what is it that I really want to get out of? I don't want to stay stuck in the rut. I really don't want to. And that's the reason. But you know what? We don't even know what heights we can get to. We don't even know the results. Wait, we're going to get to page 83 and 84 to the promises. But not only in the script of the book, but in the actuality of the of your life, where I witnessed it myself, my family is like unbelievable to me today after I'm coming out of a procedure now. And I didn't even expect it. I didn't even think about that. Oh, my God, to what depths and to what lengths am I willing to go to as a compulsive overeater? Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Leah S. And to remind everyone who may have gotten on late, we're reading on page 82 and sharing on the second full paragraph. So I'll take some more names now. Who would like to share?
Eileen M.
I'm sorry, what was your first name? Edna M?
Eileen.
Eileen, I got you. Is that Eileen M?
Yes.
Okay. And who
Donna,
else?
Donna B.
Donna B.
Ricky M.
Ricky M. Anyone else?
Julie K.
Terry B.
Julie K. and Terry B. Okay, let's do the, take those, and we'll see if we have any more time after that. Eileen M., please share with us.
Hi, Kathy. Thank you for your service. This is Eileen M., recovered compulsive overeater in New Hampshire. And, the Big Book tells us that abstinence or sobriety is just the beginning, and that we have to, you know, practice the principles in all our affairs. And, you know, sometimes the home is like the hardest place to do this. And I'm so grateful for the 10th step, particularly. I'm grateful for all the steps. And the 10th step, you know, is so integral. It's such an integral part of my life. And, you know, when I'm focused on the other person, you know, focusing on like what they're doing or what they're not doing, I mean, I can't even see the truth because I'm just so obsessed with that person. And, you know, it's so easy at times to just blame them, you know, for the way I'm feeling. And when I'm in that place, you know, my alcoholic thinking can just take over everything and it affects everything. And that's a dangerous place. And that 10th step, the turnaround, you know, I get to see how am I contributing, you know, and, you know, I can ask myself at that point is, am I in the solution or am I part of the problem? You know, my new husband and I, because I recently got married, and we've adopted a practice of prayer and meditation together, and that really has helped a lot with just everything in our lives. It's really been such a great thing because we are starting to take our problems to prayer and meditation, and you know we read the we both read kind of the same readers, you know, the meditation books in the morning. And it's just so powerful to have that in our relationship. I'm so grateful because my husband is very supportive of my work with the program. And that is a real plus to have that. And I'm very grateful. And I think that's really all I want to say is that, you know, that looking at my part is just, you know, that really contributes to the unity of the relationship. It's just, you know, taking responsibility for my side of the street. You know, I'm 50% of the relationship. And I'm just so grateful to have this design for living, this spiritual toolkit. I'm very grateful. Thank you for Pass.
Thank you, Eileen M. Donna B., please share with us.
Good morning. This is Donna B. calling from Denver, Colorado. Recovered compulsive overeater and bulimic. The word patience really strikes me. One of the definitions of patience is the capacity to accept or tolerate delay, trouble, or suffering without getting angry or upset. And I think about my children in particular and how they have accepted and tolerated my delay in being able to pay attention to them and to be present for them. And although I am in recovery, there are times still that I delay in being present for them, and I delay in giving them the attention that they seek. And what I think about my children in particular, and myself as an adult child, is that although it hurts and there are consequences, I'm always willing, and that child part of me is to some degree always waiting for my parent to acknowledge me, to see me, to love me, to really know me. I'm so grateful to be sober and abstinent, and to have the opportunity, although not perfectly, to be able to see my children, to really see them and to really be with them. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Donna B. Ricky M., please share with us.
Hi, this is Ricky M., compulsive overeater in Pennsylvania. This morning, I actually asked a question about when the best feeling, when does it get easier? Because I was really struggling this past weekend in trying to be, so since I've been in program, 6 months ago, what brought me to program was that I wasn't present for my family. I wasn't functioning. I wasn't able to make them dinner. I wasn't able to make them lunch. I really didn't know how to be. And I really knew in my gut I was working another 12-step program, and I knew I needed to, inside out, I needed to somehow get clarity of mind, not quite knowing where OA will take me. Once I got abstinent, like it says, that's the first step. And I did start functioning, and that was great. But that wasn't enough, because I was really struggling with life. Life would start hitting that the solution was gone. What do I do? What do I do? And now the last couple of weeks, I've been working the steps last like 2 months, and I finally start seeing the light through that dark way, and I start getting the clarity of what I need to be and where I need to be, and start realizing that the home is really, like, I've done resentments on my parents and family members. I've done a lot of resentments, and they're good, and I was able to not go back. I'm doing my fourth step. I did my fourth step, and they didn't come back on, but the people that are most closest to me, my family, my children, my husband, they keep coming back on those resentment lists. And I realize that that's where the hardest work is, but it's also the most growth. I was reading something, and it says in a relationship, you know, someone can be really great being single, and as soon as they get married, their worst characteristics come out. So they say, well, you know, this husband brings out the worst in me. Maybe I should get rid of him because I'm so much better alone. But no, these people are put into your life to make me a better person. And I really understand that now. What I was struggling with is that I get the clarity and the understanding, but the struggle is so real and it's so strong that when we work it, as we're working it, it's really not easy. I added something into my food plan that was higher in sugar content, and it was natural. It was great just to throw it in there. And my body reaction was so instantaneous. I got short at my husband. I got nervous and uptight. And it was scary. And I got to get the glimpse of what I'm like if I was in the active addiction. Imagine if I was eating real sugar and real flour and all the stuff that I hadn't been eating for the last 6 months. So that was a glimpse. I got to see the reaction so clearly. And that was the fear. Like, how quickly can I get back into this intensity and this scary place? But thank God, being able to get through that and really having the support of my loving husband and my children, who have so much patience for me, and having a program that teaches you, 6 and 7, that I'm willing to give over my shortcomings. They're not going away. I can't control them. I can't force them away with my will alone. Self will run riot. I have to let go and say, God, you made me react like this. This is an allergic reaction. I'm willing to give myself over completely, and here I am to serve you. And with that, I'll pass and just say thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Ricky. Julie K., please share with us.
Good morning. This is Julie K., gratefully recovering compulsive eater in Wisconsin. This is my first time on the line sharing, and I'm so grateful you guys are here. This passage really struck me, and I can really relate to the people sharing about the isolating, because that's what I did. I don't remember really lashing out as much, except that also anger was pretty much my default setting when I was in the food. But the isolating, like a depression where things didn't get done, it was almost as if I had this invalid mentality that my family had to cope with for years and years, and I was not there for them. It was like depression, And I can totally sympathize and relate to people who have depression because there was not much I could do about it at the time. Once the food got put down and I got, you know, right with my higher power and, you know, started actually living in the program, that changed. And today I am able to pull my own weight, so to speak, and I participate and I can be counted on. And that is such a big change. And it's such a relief that I feel like I'm more a whole person now, that I'm not, you know, just trembling and leaning on this crutch of food like I was before. And I'm so grateful that my husband, who is a normie, stuck by me and still does, totally understands. I made all my amends to them, my kid as well, and I'm so grateful for this program. Thank you, iPath.
Thank you, Julie K. Terry B., please share with us.
Hi, this is Terry B., compulsive overeater.
Hi, Terry.
Oh, my gosh. It's great sharing. Thank you. And it's a great topic, painful topic, to walk through this kind of memory. I've been in program for about 19 years now, and I will tell you, you know, I came in when my daughter was like 9 years old, and, you know, I came in because I wasn't a good mom, and you know, I eat my kids' food, and, you know, we go down, you know, treats aisle, and I'd let them each get a treat, but, you know, I was always on a diet, and so, you know, my heart was in the right place when I was letting them get their treats, but, you know, it seemed like 10 o'clock at night would hit, and it was like a light would go off, and I would need their treats, and I would eat their treats. And they would wake up the next day wanting them, and I would be like, I guess they're gone. I guess you ate them. You know, I'd lie. I would lie. So I was a liar, cheat, and a thief when it came to food. And then they would cry, and I would get angry with them for crying and or accusing me. They would say, one of my sons said, you know, you ate it. I know you ate it. And I denied it. And having to make that amends to him as a grown-up today was something else. So my kids have seen relapse, and they've seen me in recovery. I got married and divorced in this program, and I had hoped that my second husband would never see me in relapse. And about 7 years ago, I stepped out for a little while and decided to try it on my own again. And of course, I got the same results I'd always gotten. You know, I gained 70 pounds in 7 months, and the amends I've had to make to that man took years because I ended up bringing us into bankruptcy. And so that is a very difficult thing to come back from, and to have someone still love you in spite of, in 7 months, the damage I did was incredible. And, you know, it hurts my heart to even have to openly admit it, but this program is about truth and honesty, and that's what kills this disease. And so, you know, today I have a loving husband who continues to support me, and it took several years for him to trust me financially again, you know, and I didn't want to make that about the food, but, you know, I made bad decisions when I was in the food, and that's what happens when I'm in the food, is I make bad decisions. And and so by the grace of God, you know, when I'm in the food, when I'm out of the food, I'm in recovery, you know, I put what's important to God first, you know, my higher power, and that's what leads me. You know, I ask for help, and that's what I get it. And then I make better decisions, you know, thank God, and make better decisions in recovery. So I'm Terry, a compulsive eater from Phoenix, Arizona, and I will pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Terry B. Okay, we have time for one more share. Who would like to share? Would anyone like to share today?
This is Raquel.
Okay, Raquel. Please go ahead, Raquel.
I'm sorry if the person has a burning desire they should go.
Okay. Who was that? Who was the other person?
Bonnie D as in David in California.
Okay, thank you, Raquel. Good to hear your voice. Bonnie D, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. I'm recovered. But growing up with the problem drinker and overeater, I look to blame them or something outside myself. They say the family disease of alcoholism affects 36 others in the family, workplace, and social life. So many in 12-step rooms blame themselves or others. Another 12-step group helped me as one of those who had been affected by the addiction diseases. At first, I blamed the person. Then I blamed myself for creating this insanity in my life because I decided to eat. I decided I wanted to have that ease and comfort that everyone else was having around me. Then I worked the steps and came to forgive and make amends with compassion for my reaction to the addicts who I had blamed. My reaction went way into the disease, and that is what I define as insanity. I learned that we all have these critical times hard to deal with in life, and the pain and the impetus is my intuitive growth speaking to me, which is coming from my higher power. I try to listen to that every day. Thank you for letting me share. I pass.
Thank you very much, Bonnie. And we have a minute. Raquel, do you want to take it? Or shall we close? I'll listen for 1 minute. Okay, I guess we will close.
Yes.
Oh, you're there. Go ahead, Raquel. You have 1 minute.
I just want to claim my seat and tell you how happy I am that I belong. I never, you know, I've been in program for 40 years, since 1979, but only since 2010 did I start understanding what's flying, what's crawling, and what's sliding, so to say, after I understood the doctor's opinion and the disease. I'm so grateful for Vision for You that opened this up for me, and I'm such wonderful things are happening. I will always be a compulsive eater, and I have to watch out because what I have is a daily reprieve. And if you look it up in the dictionary, a reprieve means postponement of a death sentence. That's one of the possibilities. It's like telling somebody, you should get the electric chair, but we have no electricity today, so we'll see about tomorrow. And today is this joyous day that we have, all of us. I just want to use this opportunity to tell everybody that if I can make it and have 11 years of abstinence and recovery in December 12th, then anyone can. And I'm very glad to get calls from people. Any godly or ungodly hour would be for me a godly message. So, everybody, I wish you well, and thank you very, very much, moderator.
Thank you, Raquel. Thanks for your share. We will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Will Kara L. please read A Vision for You? Our book is meant to be suggestive only. Kara, are you there? Kara, press star 1. Okay, is there someone else who can read A Vision for You on page 164?
Eileen M.
Go ahead, Irene.
Eileen Park. This is Eileen M., recovered compulsive overeater in New Hampshire. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.